7 o'clock on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. What a Sunday. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour two of this program, Adam Vingan from Sportsnet.ca, going to give us some coverage from the Predators side of things here, is going to join us in just a moment to kick off hour two. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfy, what are you waiting for?
Kintec. So a lot of people are asking about, where does this comeback rank on the pantheon of great Canuck comeback playoffs? So first things first, it's just the third time in franchise history that they've scored with 10 seconds left in a playoff game to force overtime in the third period. The other two, oddly enough, I think I got this right, both of them were scored by Matt Cook. Both.
Right.
Prior to this. Mm-hmm. He had the one against Calgary, quite famously, which didn't turn out great for the Canucks. Spoiler, don't go back and watch the series. They didn't win. And then I forgot about this one. In 2003, game one of the second round against Minnesota, Cook scored with 2 seconds left to force overtime, and then Trent Klatt scored in overtime. I have no memories of that.
Yeah, I don't remember that. No.
You guys? No? No one, right? No one. I know it happened, because when someone referenced it, I was like, I remember it, but I couldn't tell you how it was scored, what kind of goal it was, nothing. But anyway, so I'm in between hosting a radio show and trying not to sound like I gargled with battery acid yesterday. I am trying to put together a list of the greatest Canuck playoff comebacks. It's got to end with a win. Mm-hmm. First things first. Like, all due respect to these ones where you force overtime and you lose, it's got to end with a win. I think right up there with yesterday's goal was Kessler with 14 seconds left in game five that led to the stanchion goal by Bieksa. That was up there.
I just don't know if anything's going to – there might be some games that compared in significance, but I don't know if there's going to be a game that compares in – the likelihood of it all.
That's why it's the greatest, because of how probable it was. Because they went from playing awful to winning the game.
Think if you were to make the odds of all that happening, right? You know how you make probabilities, you go this times this times this times this.
Nine things got to go their way.
So the way the Canucks were playing, what would you say their chances of scoring once with an empty net would be? Like, let's be generous and say 1 in 5. Right?
Sure.
20%.
Sure.
Okay, when Colton Sissons had that puck, when he did have that puck, where he had that puck, what would you say his chances of scoring in that goal or missing on that goal were?
10%, 5% likelihood?
Yeah, like maybe 1%,
1%,
right?
Yeah.
And then they
an empty net after all.
And then they had to get another goal, and then they had to get a goal in overtime. So you combine all of those, and I think your chances of all of that happening is like easily less than 1%.
Let's go to the phone lines now to get the Nashville side of things. Joining us yet again in this series, Adam Vingan from Sportsnet.ca here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Adam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good. A little rough, but good. It was a fun day yesterday from our side of things. From the Nashville side of things, I don't know if you've been able to go through the annals of crushing playoff losses that the Predators have had, but I've got to think, given that this was at Bridgestone Arena, the probabilities were so low that they were going to emerge from this with a loss. That's got to be up there in terms of the most painful playoff losses in franchise history.
Yeah, I don't think it would be hyperbole to say that it is the most devastating playoff loss in Predators history. The one that came immediately to mind was, you have to go back all the way to 2010. The Predators were playing the Blackhawks in the first round of the playoffs. They lost 5-4 in overtime. Patrick Kane scored the game-tying goal with, I believe, 14 seconds left, shorthanded. Martin Erat turned the puck over in the offensive zone. Patrick Kane scored shorthanded with 14 seconds left to tie the game. And I believe it was Marian Hossa who scored the overtime winner early in overtime, not as early as Elias Lindholm yesterday. But that was a back-breaking loss for the Predators. But that was before they had really emerged as a team, you know, that was considered a contender in the NHL. But I read yesterday that this was the first time in Predators playoff history that they lost a game when leading by 2+ goals in the third period. But yeah, it was absolutely shocking just because of how the Predators were playing in that third period. They get that goal from Philip Forsberg very early on. And I saw Jason's tweet about it's 2 goals, but it feels like a million. And it absolutely did feel that way. Watching that game, but it was funny when Besser scored the goal to make it 3-2. Paul Skrbina, who works for the Tennessean, I was sitting next to him downstairs in the media room, and he said to me, "I've got a bad feeling about this one." And I said, "You know what? I do too. Like it just didn't feel like the Predators were going to close it out, and you know that missed empty net by Colton Sissons is going to haunt him and Predators fans, I'm sure, for a while. I mean, to Colton's credit, you know, he was shooting it on his backhand. He was being hounded by, I believe, Hughes and Pettersson. He had multiple defenders on him. So it wasn't like it was a Patrick Stefan-esque empty net miss or anything like that. But it was still back-breaking. And it's also not the first time the Predators have lost a home playoff game to a third-string goalie. When the reports came out that Seeloff was going to start, I immediately went back to 2018. The Predators were the President's Trophy winners. They were playing the Colorado Avalanche in the first round. They were up 3-1 in the series, and the Hamburglar, Andrew Hammond, had an absolute fantastic game in Game 5 to force Game 6, which the Predators won handily. But Andrew Hammond came in an elimination game and made, I think, 44 saves, I think it was, to extend the series. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how a team recovers from that one. That, you know, the odds of that happening, or I have to imagine, were so slim. And Predators fans are waking up this morning feeling absolutely terrible.
What were the Preds saying after the game? What was Andrew Brunette saying?
I mean, they said what you would expect them to say. Obviously, they felt that they just let this game slip right through their fingers. Too many defensive breakdowns at the end of the game, and you got to quickly turn the page. But I can't imagine what that flight is going to be like schlepping all the way to Vancouver today. I think they're already in the air or close to being in the air, and they're going to have to sit on that one and hope that they can get the series back to Nashville. But, yeah, they were – you know, what's funny is listening, and as I'm sure you guys already listened to it, you know, sitting in on Rick Tocchet's post-game news conference, mm-hmm. he sounded like the coach whose team was down 3-1 in the series. You know, Andrew Brunette sounded like the coach whose team was up 3-1 in the series. And I get that. I saw a stat from Sportsnet Stats last night that the Canucks have 71 shots on goal through 4 games, which is the fewest fewest ever through 4 games in the opening round of the playoffs.
Yep.
And I think they only have 54 shots on net at 5-on-5. My quick math tells me that's like 13, 14 shots per game at 5-on-5, and they're up 3-1 in this series. I mean, the Predators have done a lot right, especially at 5-on-5 in the series, and particularly in the 2 games here in Nashville. But I think the difference is the Canucks top players, you know, specifically JT Miller and Brock Besser, have risen to the occasion. Now, Quinn Hughes has been taking an absolute beating, especially yesterday. But that play he made to keep the puck in along the wall before the game-tying goal was just, you know, vintage Quinn Hughes. And, you know, even though Elias Pettersson hasn't played particularly well in the series, the Predators' top players haven't matched that. I mean, Josi and Forsberg have been okay, but they haven't taken over games yet. And we've seen that from Miller, who's been outstanding from the start, and Besser had an incredible game yesterday. I just think I think some of the talent discrepancy in terms of the high-end talent is starting to show, that the fact that the Canucks have not really played their best games in this series and they're up 3-1.
Is Vancouver's penalty kill maybe the unsung hero of this series so far?
Yeah, I would think so, just because of how well the Predators' power play was playing entering the playoffs. I think they were 27.2% in the 31 games they played after the All-Star break. But since that goal, you know, from Ryan O'Reilly to start. The Canucks have been excellent on the penalty kill, and from what I understand, they were playing well in the penalty kill in the final few games of the regular season.
Mm-hmm. It's been a massive issue for the Canucks the last few years too.
Right.
Like their penalty kill
has been
dreadful.
They were the worst. Yeah. They were the worst unit in the league last season, and you know they've played really well. I mean, this is reminiscent of a 2019. The Predators were the Central Division champions. They played the Dallas Stars in the first round. They were the Central Division champions, despite having the worst power play in the league. And they went 0-15 on the power play in the series loss to the Stars. So what makes this feel worse is that the Predators' power play was actually playing well entering the postseason, and they haven't been able to get it going, which is, as you said, absolute credit to the Canucks penalty killers. I mean, I think of the play near the end of Game 3, Ian Cole laying out, blocking Roman Josi, and then taking Ryan O'Reilly's shot off the side of the helmet, you know, to block what should be a wide open look. So, yeah, look, I think the Canucks have done just enough to be in this position. Now, if they advance, I imagine, and potentially play Edmonton, they're going to have to be significantly better. But sometimes you don't have to. I mean, sometimes you can escape a series not playing your best, and that's what I thought Rick Tocchet was talking about last night. He knows that his team has probably not been the better team at 5-on-5 in the series, and they're still up, so he can't take that for granted.
We're speaking to Adam Vingan here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Adam is a Nashville Predators reporter for Sportsnet.ca. You mentioned you were in the building yesterday, Adam. Bridgestone Arena can be very loud. The fans can be very energetic, and they had a lot of reason to through 57 minutes. I got to ask, what did it sound like after Elias Lindholm scored that goal to win it for the Canucks?
Oh, man. I wish I could describe it adequately. I don't know if I can come up with the words immediately. That's like something I feel like I would have to dig into the thesaurus to find, you know, the adequate words, or listen to Thomas Strantz, who I know is a human thesaurus in his own right. It was, you know, the looks on people's faces. You know, I was downstairs, you know, in overtime, and you know, they had the feeds from both the Sportsnet feed and the local feed. And I guess it might have been during a commercial break or something. And they just had this, like, they were holding on this one Predators fan, like, for, like, 30 seconds. Maybe, I think it was during a commercial break. Yeah. And just the look on this guy's face, it was just this blank stare, like his life had just flashed before his eyes. It was, you know, some of the other fan reaction shots. It was painful for Predators fans. As I said, if you were to tell me that was the most devastating loss of any kind in Nashville Predators history, maybe with the exception of them losing the Stanley Cup final game in Nashville, which was a 2-0 game with a very late goal to win it by Patrick Hornquist, that might be just because it was a championship losing game. But, you know, in terms of the probability of them winning the game yesterday and them ultimately losing, yeah, it's up there, man.
Adam, this was great. Thank you very much for taking the time to do this. I'm not going to try and even predict what this series has in store because it's been wildly, wildly unpredictable so far. So I'll say this. Whatever happens, we'll do this one more time before the series gets out, whenever this series finishes.
All right, guys. Well, yeah, we'll see what happens. Something tells me that Vancouver won't be heading back here. That's just my gut. But we will see. You're right. It has been very unpredictable.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, Adam Vingan, Predators reporter for Sportsnet.ca here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
I want to read some of your texts about whether or not you saw the end of the game last night. A few of you did not for various reasons, and I just want to read some of these. Phoenix texts in, I was watching the game at my father-in-law's place. He had his neighbor and stinking kids over as well.
Stinking kids.
I left in the second intermission to find some peace and quiet, and it worked. Yeah, sometimes you need a venue change.
Props to that guy for using the phrase stinking kids.
Stinking
kids. I haven't heard that in a while.
Sometimes
my stinking kids.
Sometimes you do need a venue change. I remember, I think it was the Seahawks game against the Packers. You remember their miracle win against the Packers?
Yep.
I left the bar and went home, mm-hmm. and then credited myself with the Seahawks victory.
A well-earned back pat.
Here's another one. I turned the game off. Unsigned text here. I turned the game off with 9 minutes left in the third. I fell asleep in the second and woke up to 3-1 Preds. Blood started to boil as I watched the Canucks float around the ice, listening to the fans, having the time of their lives. I couldn't take it, and I turned it off. Checked my phone for the obvious 4-1 final to find what? 3-3. Realized I was the jinx and didn't watch OT on purpose. 4-3, just a minute into OT. Good times in Vancouver. And then this texter ends with, "You're welcome, people." Wow. Yeah, it's so funny. I'll constantly talk about, like, guys, we got to stop talking about jinxes. It's for the mentally weak. And then I'm like, well, there's no way I'm shaving off this mustache now, right? Like, I'm into it as much as everyone else. Nacho Cheese texts in. I turned off the game 5 minutes into the third period, disgusted, and I ran errands. I was in my car outside a pet food store listening to music. My phone blows up. My good buddy, son, and wife tell me the Canucks tied it and that I'm not allowed to return home. They won in overtime. Canucks fans, you're welcome. Kevin on the road. God, there's so many stories from this game.
A lot of you ducked out.
My entire group chat turned the game off out of frustration after the 3-1 goal. Does this mean we can't watch Game 5? Yes, it does. I apologize to you, Kevin, on the road. And here, just this final text, there are honestly a bunch of them that came in. If you think turning this game off is embarrassing, backstory is me and my family are going to Nashville this week and managed to pick up tickets to Game 6. And yesterday, with about 5 minutes to go, I sent a group text saying, Game 6 is looking pretty good. Oh. The old reverse jinx. I'm not sure. I can't make a prediction on what's going to happen in Game 5. I hope that the Preds are so distraught from whatever's happened in this series that they're just like, well, it's just not our series. Well, it's been a good season. You know, it's going to be crazy in Vancouver. We got no hope. And I hope at the same time that the Canucks are like, we need to be a lot better. And they can find, I don't know if it's a sense of urgency or it's maybe just doing things a little bit differently, a different game plan, or maybe it just comes down to winning more battles and they put the Preds away. But I'm not quite like at the point of, all right, let's prepare for the Oilers here, because one win for the Preds in Vancouver and all of a sudden we're the ones doing the uh-oh.
Well, here's a few things to consider. Trying to predict this series is a near impossible task. You'll remember it wasn't that long ago. The Canucks started this series and won game one with Thatcher Demko as their goalie. And that narrative has changed not once, but twice in terms of who the starting goalie has been. So that's a huge thing. In a vacuum, that would have been the biggest story, is that your Vezina caliber goalie gets hurt, might be done for a long time, and you're left to turn it to the backup, but then he gets hurt. And by the way, Rick Tocchet did confirm post-game yesterday that it is an injury that Casey DeSmith is dealing with, because there was some thought that he might have had the flu. Tocchet said he's injured, and they made the call on Saturday, because Tocchet said, we needed to let Silovs know that he was going, not last minute.
Yeah.
By the way, Artie,
have a good sleep.
Take off that.
You're playing tomorrow.
Take off your ice hat and go into the game. They needed to get that sorted. So now they're down to the third string goalie. So there's something very unpredictable. Second part of this is that this series now has been defined by sort of flash moments from the Canucks. In game one, it was the 12 seconds, right? Two goals, 12 seconds apart. And game four, it was two goals in the final 3 minutes and then one in the first minute of overtime. So there's been, and it's really impossible to try and predict when the next flash moment is going to happen, because they happen in a flash. That's
right.
Kind
yeah,
of the
yeah,
whole
yeah.
point of the thing,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know what to expect. The only thing that's kind of held consistent is that the home team really seems to have had some energy and some juice, and at times has been the dominant team. Like, the Canucks were the dominant team in game two in terms of shot metrics and just piling it on the Preds. Preds were very opportunistic. They found a way to block a lot of shots, and they were timely goals. We haven't talked at all about game three, the Friday game that the Canucks won, because, you know, Sunday's game kind of takes precedence, but it was the exact opposite. You saw the Preds come out with that expected energy you would have being the home team, having the crowd behind. behind you. And that's – so I'm kind of thinking they come back to Vancouver and all the things you were talking about might hold serve. Like, the Canucks might come back and get another lift from the Rogers Arena crowd, and they're back home, and they'll be all the, you know, last change, mm-hmm. all the sort of typical things.
Well, laid it off of that win, too. And the reverse, the Preds completely crushed off of the loss.
But I can't predict any of that.
I wouldn't feel comfortable.
No, I wouldn't feel comfortable saying that anything we've seen will hold serve and moving forward.
Yeah, maybe not.
Because it's been such a bizarre series. Yeah. It's the most bizarre series out of all of them. I'll be dead honest.
Okay, we got an open segment on the other side. So let's move on from, you know, stories about how you watch the game into what you're looking for game five tomorrow. I know Tocchet is hoping for more from all he'll say is some guys. And he said, we've got to get some guys in the fight. Hopefully this win will bring some juice to some guys. Who could he be talking about?
No idea. Not a clue.
Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He needs to try harder. Yeah. Definitely needs to try harder.
I actually feel bad about bringing this up because, like, I know there's someone getting into their car right now or listening live, and, like, he's going to be, he or she's going to be sitting there going, like, oh, I'm going to tune into the Halford and Brough show. I bet they're going to be super enthusiastic about the game and talk about, like, how great it was. And we have done that for, what, an hour, almost an hour and a half.
90 minutes.
So do we need to talk about Petey?
Yeah. Well, first off, any listener that would complain about where we're going with this should look at the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket because it is loaded with questions asking where EP40 is, what's gone wrong, what's happening.
Unfortunately, remember on Friday, I predicted that Game 3 was going to be Petey's big breakout. Well, that didn't happen. And my justification for it was Game 2 was a nightmare for Petey, but at least he was involved in the play. At least he had the puck a lot. The puck was on his stick. He was trying to make things happen out there. Things just weren't going well for him. So I thought, okay, well, maybe that in a weird sense is progress. After watching Petey in games 3 and 4, I have come to the conclusion, and hopefully it's a wrong one, but this is my conclusion. I just don't think you can count on much from Petey. You can be hopeful, for sure. And Rick Tocchet is saying, I hope the win will bring some juice to some guys. You can be hopeful. Let's all be hopeful. But if I'm Tocchet, this is a clever wordplay I've got here. I'm not robbing Peter to pay Petey. Which is to say, I'm not going to rejig my lines to help Petey. I mean, I did that a lot down the stretch. I gave him Garland for a bit. I gave him Besser for a bit. Didn't really work. I'm not giving them Garland and Joshua. I'm giving the best line mates to the guys who are delivering. I'm keeping Lindholm with Garland and Joshua. You know, the guys that teamed up to score the game-winning goal in overtime yesterday? Mm-hmm. I'm keeping Miller, Besser, and Suter together. I think Suter's been better than Pettersson. If anything, I'm giving Lindholm some time with Besser and Miller if I'm going to sub out Suter. I'm not putting the Lotto line back together. I'm going to give Lindholm that time. Now, here's the big issue. Can the Canucks win the cup if Pettersson keeps playing like this? Well, probably not. But right now, if I'm Rick Tocchet, I'm worried about eliminating the Predators mm-hmm. and getting through this series. And then you worry about the next series. And if I'm Tocchet, I'm not making Pettersson a major focus in Game 5 because Petey's been so bad, and he's been given chance after chance after chance. This is his redemption game. No, this is his redemption game. Oh, maybe this is his redemption game. Mm-hmm. Maybe after the contract is signed, he'll get better. Maybe blah, 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 right? None of the blahs have worked.
Yep.
Question. So, could we get his parents to yell at him? They are there.
I don't know what's going on. I think I'm leaning more towards you're going to have to, you being the collective royal, you are going to have to move past like trying to figure out what's wrong mm-hmm. and just accept it that it's not working. And you're still in the middle of the playoffs.
Could they put him with Garland and Joshua?
You could do anything.
Just said that I wouldn't do that because you know who that's unfair to? Lindholm.
Yeah, but just for a few shifts. just to get him going, see what happens.
You
just
give
it a whirl.
You are Charlie Brown kicking the football. He's tried it. Talkin has tried the lotto line back together.
No,
it hasn't worked.
No, Garland and Joshua, he hasn't tried that yet.
Why not? Maybe that's the answer.
Well, maybe I'm not saying it's the answer, but why not try it?
A-Dog, are you watching him play?
I know, he's not playing.
Are
well.
You watching him play?
Yes, he's not playing.
Has he won a battle?
He has not won any battles. But maybe Garland and Joshua come into battles and get him the puck.
Maybe it'll work for us.
Yes. I'm just saying, just give it a whirl.
I don't know,
what
man.
What if it does work? Then I'll look like a genius, right, Bruff? So maybe just give it a whirl.
All right. I want to hear from the listeners. You know my opinion. You know A-Dog over here,
optimistic
A-Dog.
A-Dog's going to get a lot of calls from people with some great investment ideas. This time, it might work.
I just met this Nigerian prince. He seems on the level.
This one, I believe. The other guys, they definitely screwed me in the end. Yeah. But this guy, there's something about him. There's something about him.
All Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of a Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
On a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Sweet, sweet Monday. And I can say that genuinely and earnestly. All those other times I was lying. I hate Mondays. Like Garfield that way. But this is a Monday that I am okay with. Because that was a lot of fun last night. For those of you that somehow missed it or maybe turned it off and never turned it back on, the Canucks did win that hockey game yesterday, 4-3 against the Nashville Predators in overtime. You are listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. The only reason I'm bringing all of that up is a preamble, because Bruff and I were wondering during the break, I wonder what the probability of a comeback was in-game. You know, for NFL games, they do the ESPN probability graph.
Right, yeah.
Based on score and metrics and time of game remaining, they throw out the odds of a team winning and subsequently a team trying to come back. So Money Puck did it for the Canucks yesterday. So for all of you that ducked out when it was 3-1 with 3 minutes left, I can't really blame you. According to MoneyPuck, the Canucks had a 0.4% chance of winning before Besser scored the tying goal with 2 minutes and 48 seconds left.
A-Dog was like, so you're telling me there's a chance?
So you're saying there's an opportunity. Did you hear that? You didn't, did you?
No, I was cutting audio. What did
That's
you
say? That's fair. The Canucks had, prior to Besser scoring that, the 3-2 goal, a 0.4% chance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What did the probability say when the puck was right on Colton Sisson's stick and the net was empty?
Did not have it. I'm looking.
Because I would say it was like about a 0.000007% chance of winning the game when the puck was right on Colton Sisson's stick and it was a 2-on-1 and it looked like all he needed to do was, people will be like, it was on the backhand. That could be a tough play. I'm like, not if you're in the NHL.
Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. When it was 3-1, they had a 6% chance.
Okay.
Because there was time elapsed.
Yeah, yeah.
But when right prior to it, because there was only 8 seconds left when Besser scored. Mm-hmm. So at its peak, they had a 0.4% chance to win that game, which is remarkable.
Petey was one of the guys pressuring Sissons, right?
You mean Petey, who had his second assist of the series?
Yeah,
in that
4-3? Maybe that was all Pettersson.
Oh, my God, guys.
We didn't talk enough about the
Friday
game.
Not enough credit.
So Bruff.
Typical Bruff, ripping on Petey.
Yeah, Bruff prior to game three came on this very show and said,
yeah,
Petey's in line for a big game. So then after the game, we all got on the text thread and started laughing at him. And he's like, Guys, Petey got an assist, so,
so I was kind of right.
Pretty big breakout game for him.
I predicted this.
Yeah, and now he's got. If
now
you look,
Thomas over here.
If the glass is half full, Pedersen's got a 2-game point streak going.
Ooh,
yeah.
Well, I did get one thing kind of right. We haven't really talked about game three, but it was funny that we spent after game two, practically the entire show on like, how do you get shots through against the Preds? And then the Canucks, the answer was, don't take any.
Yeah, just no
right?
shots.
Like, they were just completely dominated.
By the way, they have
Here
not-
are the shot totals yeah. in the four games. Game one, the Canucks had 21. Game two, which they dominated, they had 18 because, 30 were blocked, 30 missed the net. game three, they won with 12 shots mm-hmm. on goal. And last night, even though it went to overtime, they only had 20 shots. So they had, I guess, 19 through regulation.
So the stats making the rounds this morning, the one that's got everyone's attention, and Adam Vingan, by the way, if you want to hear Adam, the Hour 2 podcast will be available for download in a few minutes. 71 shots on goal versus the Predators through the four games thus far. The fewest in NHL history, the entire history of the entire National Hockey League. No team has had so few shots through four games of an opening round playoff series. Like, they are this again. You want to talk about unpredictable. How does a team set a record for shot volume futility and hold a 3-1 series lead at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
None of it makes any sense. If you had told me that by game five of this series, the Canucks were going to have Artur Silov starting and they were going to have set a record for fewest shots in an opening round series, I would have been like, well, they would have been done. They would have been swept.
So Colton Sissons is from North Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Texter pointed out. So this is like a subconscious, like, he just really wants to see his Canucks win one.
Or maybe you got cocky. It was like, I'm going posting it. Just missed.
I do want to say this, though. Vingan mentioned the high-end talent of the Canucks coming through and maybe the Preds not having it.
Mm-hmm.
There is something to be said for the puck being on the stick to close out the game of Colton Sissons.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I mean, say what you will, they have guys, O'Reilly, Nyquist, and Forsberg especially, but after that, you do rely, I mean, for better or worse, like, you're relying on Colton Sissons in big moments.
Yeah.
That says something about your team.
The Canucks can get outplayed in game three and four, but they have the game breakers.
This is meant as no disrespect to Sissons, who's, you know, he's a full-fledged NHLer, right? He's been there for a long time, but he was the guy that was tasked with closing it out, and he missed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Plain and simple. And I think that probably says a lot about the makeup of their team.
Who do you think will start game five?
Silov's.
Yeah, Silov's. I think so, too. I think the Canucks will be like, well, Casey is still injured, and Casey will be like in the back, and like, no, I'm not. Yes, he is. He's still injured.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, like we said earlier, I don't think you can really have a – you're going to make a definitive decision, but there's – cases for both guys, very valid.
Give them
arguments.
Each a period totally. And rock, paper, scissors for right. the third.
There's no slam dunk here.
One of them might get hurt doing rock, paper, scissors the way things are going.
Good old rock.
Well, there was a point in the game last night where it looked so dire, not only because of the way the Canucks were playing, but like everyone was getting hurt.
Yep.
And Quinn Hughes.
Should probably mention that Hughes is getting run over.
Oh, man, that double hit against him was rough.
Yeah.
He was the
Hughes sandwich.
Oh, man. He was, you could tell he was hurting after that. Like,
I think I heard the post-game show say he was the low ice time of all the defensemen through two periods.
Like, so how the hell did he pull off that spin move then? It, like, well, just willed it into him.
That move he made on Nyquist.
Yeah, I just obliterated him. It was incredible.
But so Tocchet spoke a lot in the post-game about, he kept saying, like, Nashville sends three. So they've got this really aggressive forecheck. And he said, we're going to have to do some things differently with Hughes. He can't go through this much punishment. We're four games into the first round.
Quinn Hughes is like, I missed the Kings, the 1-3-1, just the one. Just the one. It was amazing. It was great.
Why is everybody so mean to me?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a very smart game plan by the Preds, right? If you think about two of the Canucks' most important players, how much does Quinn Hughes weigh? Like 170 pounds? How much does Petey weigh? I don't know, like 40? It looks like 40 pounds right now, you know? Bully those guys.
Yep.
And I know a lot of people were like, that's a cheap shot by Lauzon or whatever his name is on when they scored. Well, yeah, it's a smart cheap shot. First of all, he didn't get called for roughing when it was clearly intentional what he did to Petey. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Petey, get up and stick him.
Yep.
You know, do something. Don't just look sad, right? And, you know, I maybe there should have been a response by the Canucks. I don't know if anyone saw it. I don't know what the situation was. But at the end of the day, you know, the Preds are trying to win too. And if you were a Preds fan, if you were the Preds coach, wouldn't you be like laughing? If you saw, what if Zadorov did that to one of the Preds players? You wouldn't be like, that's a cheap shot. You'd be like, that's smart. Like, bully these guys, because by the looks of it, at times in the game, they can be bullied.
I've watched enough of the other series right now to note the Canucks-Preds, the hate level, and the post-whistle stuff, and the fighting for every inch. It really hasn't manifested itself. There hasn't been a lot of nastiness to the series.
There's been a lot of big hits.
Yeah, but there hasn't been the response, quite honestly, both ways.
For the most part, they've just been like, we're going to hit and you're going to hit. And yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I know that a lot of the instances that we saw on the weekend were in blowout games. But like the Winnipeg, Colorado, there was a lot of nastiness in that one. Edmonton, LA, a lot there as well. I understand that the Canucks and Preds have played closer games, so they're not going to go to the craziness when it comes to it. But I think that there could be a lot more in terms of post-whistle. There have been a lot of big hits, right? Maybe it's just the makeup of the two teams that they don't have those particular guys. But like the after the Lozon incident following the goal, at some point, and maybe it'll happen in Game 5, but there's got to be something there.
What do you think Rutherford and Alvin and ownership are thinking about watching Pettersson play? No, just Pettersson right now. Because don't forget, I know a lot of you are like kind of tongue-in-cheek or not so tongue-in-cheek, like blaming the media for the fact that Petey signed. The way it went down was the Canucks were pressuring Petey to talk contract. And that got out to the media. And we were basically just saying like, you know, it's not us saying that Petey should sign right now. It's the Canucks saying. Like, they wanted – remember how it went. It went – essentially, like, the Canucks were kind of communicating to the media, like, we want this guy to sit down with us and talk because we need to figure out his future before we do some other things, right? That was the whole – that was the whole. Now, when Pettersson did sign, absolutely a lot of people in the media – including us, we're like, wow, they got him for a pretty good number considering what a lot of people were throwing out there. A lot of people thought it might be 12 or north of 12, and it wasn't that. And we were like, eh, that's pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. Definitely. In the back of our minds, we were like, well, I hope he's up for it, right? Because he hasn't been playing particularly well. And maybe, you know, when the contract noise dies down, maybe he'll play better. And I think we'd seen Petey go through these stretches before and come out of them, right? A couple of years ago, this thing happened where it looked like he just at times didn't even belong out on the ice. And he came out of it. He had a 100-point season last year. You know, early this season, you know, he looked like he was going to have another 100-point season. But I really do wonder what those guys are thinking now that they've made this massive commitment to Petey. Mm-hmm. And there are times when he's on the ice – where, and I'm not using hyperbole, if he were a rookie and the coach saw him play the way he was playing, he would be a healthy scratch the next game. This is not me advocating for Petey to be healthy scratch. I'm just telling you the level he is playing at times. He looks completely lost. He looks like he's 16 or 17 years old out there based on his abilities to win puck battles, the fact he's constantly falling, the fact he's constantly getting bullied. Maybe he's injured a little bit, but I think, and I continue to think, I've said it all along, I think most of this is mental.
Prior to the break, you made a joke about, you know, choosing the goalie for next game as a rock, paper, scissors type thing. Great text here from Chet and Burnaby. It's what we learned. It's an early one. Get him in, by the way. Hashtag WWO, what we learned, what I learned. Chet said, I learned that Brock beats Sissons.
I like that.
That's not bad. I actually, you know what? I feel bad for, like, this is probably the least talked about playoff hat trick of, like, we haven't mentioned him at all. We're like, oh, yeah, by the way.
Besser's like, hello.
By the way, Brock Besser got a hat trick yesterday. He scored the final goal with, like, less than 10 seconds left. But Petey, like, that's been, but, you know, I understand the level of frustration coming through in droves, by the way, to the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket with Pedersen, because everyone's just sort of like waiting for something to happen.
I see the Pedersen for Marner in the inbox now. Well, so that's a thing.
The weird part is,
Toronto was like, we're going to trade Marner to Utah. And I was like, no, we've got that reserved for Pedersen.
Yeah.
Game two.
There's no move clause in the first year of his contract.
But game two, where the Canucks had that great disparity in shot and shot volume and everything, we made the point that Petey was far from invisible. He was quite visible, and he was all over the place, either having his shots blocked or missing the net. But the idea was that there was a drive towards something.
He was involved.
And it's gone the other way since then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's puzzling and concerning and frustrating, and the fan base is very much showing that right now. Also, here's one from Oz in Squamish. Hashtag WWL, and we talked about this at the break. Zadorov and Dakota Joshua have to be prioritized this season. Show Zadorov, Toronto, and their pathetic core. Get Rogers chanting his name on Tuesday. Make him to take a deal here. I'm trying to think of a guy whose stock and profile have been raised higher than Zadorov's in this market over the last 2 months.
Well, that's another guy that I wonder what management is thinking about him, because by the sounds of it and from what we heard, when they first acquired Zadorov, the first few weeks they saw him in action, they were kind of though that idea that they were putting his name out there in order to explore the trade market, like that absolutely happened. That did happen. There's no saying that they wanted to trade him, but you know, multiple reports said it was they were thinking about it. And remember, they had to open some cap space, and one of the guys at the time they could have traded was Kuzmenko, but we didn't know if that was going to happen, and there were just a lot of things in flux. And I still don't know if the plan is to re-sign Zadorov, because he's going to want big term and a fairly big number. And I think he's going to get it somewhere, right? Like, if you're Zadorov and you're having these playoffs and you're his agent and you're his age in the situation he's in, like, this is your time to really cash in, right?
Yeah,
he could get
100%.
A big deal. I'm sure Brad Treliving, is going to pursue Zadorov as Zadorov's available.
I think a lot of people are going to pursue him.
But I just wonder. Exactly. But I just wonder if this management group might be like, maybe a better plan would be to, not give Hronek the money, and you keep Zadorov and you get Chris Tanev, and you go forward with that. Tanev can play with Quinn Hughes.
Zadorov's a playoff performer too. That's big.
And a
net
front presence now too.
Yes.
Yeah. Which
he did not get enough credit in that tying goal.
Yeah.
He boxed out two Preds. They could not get to Besser to save their lives.
That was the key to the whole thing. Like, just put Z in front of the net.
Exactly.
Let's just do it that way.
It was a great call.
They did that against, remember the game that we went to, that awful game against, actually it wasn't the awful game, it was the second awful game against LA at the end when they couldn't get any shots through, and then at the end it was just get Big Z in front of them.
Right, yeah.
So they've used it.
Honestly, maybe it's recency bias, but at this point I think I'd rather Zadorov than Hronek, if I'm being honest. If I had to pick between the two, like if they could only afford one of them, I think I might say Zadorov because he might be a little cheaper. And as you said, throw Tanev in the mix, and there you go.
So are you guys excited to see how the Leafs perform tonight in Boston? Not excited, but like they're the Canucks playing, but like curious.
And sometimes.
Maybe actually excited to see if they get bombed in Boston tonight and then they're out, everything's got to be on the table in Toronto. Forcing Tavares out, forcing Marner out, firing Brendan Shanahan. Like, there could be, Keith is gone, for sure. Although I said that last year.
Yeah, I know.
When they went out and then Brad Treliving kept him. But Brad Treliving kind of, do you remember how late it all went down with him getting hired in Toronto? And, like, they were still obviously talking with Dubas, and then Dubas at the very last minute, they didn't come to an agreement. He goes to Pittsburgh. But it was almost like Brad Treliving didn't have enough time to plan an appropriate offseason. So he just kind of signed a bunch of one-year guys and said, all right, we'll keep the core four together. We'll keep the coach. And I guess we'll try and, see what we can do with this team.
Mm-hmm.
if they lose to the Bruins tonight and they
tomorrow.
If they lose to the Bruins tomorrow, then like they're blowing that thing up, aren't they?
I mean,
like they'll keep Austin Matthews in the coop, Nylander, but then everything else has to be on the table.
So
tomorrow,
watching everything that transpired over the weekend, I often say like, oh, that was so good and so delicious. It must be fattening. Watching the Leafs yell at one another, and watching Nylander yell very clearly, "Stop crying, bro." On the bat was like the best thing I've ever seen. Like, this is great. They're busting apart at the seams. Mm-hmm. They're just losing it on the bench.
Like,
each other.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
Yeah, right. Matthews is sulking and he's not feeling well, so he had to leave. Like, it's great. I love watching it happen because now you're starting to see the cracks and the fissures, like just in plain view. Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Is that all the angst and the years of frustration and disappointment and losing, it's all coming to the surface.
Wednesday morning could be, I don't want to jinx it, could be incredible. Wednesday morning could be incredible.
If the Canucks lose?
No.
Game five.
If Toronto loses and the Canucks move on.
So tonight's game, apologies for that. Thank you for texting in the information. Tonight's games are Tampa at Florida. Have you seen what Steven Stamkos has been doing for the Lightning? What's
five
he got?
Goals in four
five
games.
Goals in four games. They've got a decision to make on him, too.
I just want to say that when that was 3-0, I said, I think Tampa Bay's coming back in that one. Just want to put
okay,
that out
well,
there.
Well, they've won one game.
That's
tonight is in
they're already
Sunrise.
Coming back.
Okay, well, clip that just, for tomorrow.
Yep.
And then the other game is Dallas at Vegas, which has been a really weird series. All the road teams have won. That was a really nice goal by Wyatt Johnston to win it in overtime.
Dallas is alive by the skin of its teeth right now, but they're alive.
Yeah.
They were one shot. I mean, and they outplayed Vegas in that game for sure. They needed it. They had to. But they're hanging by a thread. They just really haven't figured it out yet. Given the form that they had in the regular season, the offense they're just not finding the back of the net with enough regularity. They had a lot of shots on Thompson in game three, so that was good. But they're very, very fortunate to be where they are, because when that thing went to overtime, I'm thinking, man, these guys are one bad bounce or one goal away, because Ottinger hasn't been great, of being down 0-3, and like just this, you're crushed at that point, right? So, but that's been an interesting series.
A lot of people texting in about the Leafs, and I think here's the thing with the Leafs. They had the chance. And I'm not talking about this year. I'm talking about the 3, 4, 5 years where they were a really good team, at least in the regular season. And they either lost hard-fought series in the first round to really good teams, or they choked. You know, they choked against Columbus in a play-in series. They choked hard against Montreal in it wasn't the bubble, it was the following year when it was the all-Canadian division and the Habs go all the way to the Stanley Cup final. That should have been the Leafs going to the Stanley Cup final. Like, they had
They've had plenty of looks at it.
They were up 3-1
on
the Habs, who weren't, like, the Habs were a surprise team. They just choked. And now they're in this situation where they don't have the bargain contracts anymore. They don't have this guy like, wow, he's only making this and he's doing that. And they've got to completely revamp their back end this offseason. Well, you know, good luck. Good luck. I don't think it's going to happen for them.
Okay, we got one final hour to go on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. A reminder, the Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Merit Kitchens. Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at meritkitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. One final hour to go. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.